I think you're really starting out from the wrong point of view, because we're not basically a heavy metal band. We're a bit more subtle than that. Aren't we, Colin?
What?
We're a bit more subtle than that.
Yeah, we're subtle, but basically, we're heavy metal, aren't we?
Yeah, Colin's right. If we made a record, it'd be so heavy you couldn't get off the turntable.
Yeah, look, I know that, but I mean, what I'm saying is we're just not simple heavy metal, you know.
I thought we were heavy metal.
I know we've got heavy roots, you know. And I mean, what I'm trying to say is that we're trying to progress a bit, you know, we're trying to break a few barriers.
Are we?
That is one of my favorite movie quotes right there. That, of course, is an excerpt from Bad News. This is podcast number 4 for Shockwaves Hard Radio. We got a great podcast for you this time around. This podcast is going to kind of be our Bay Area thrash metal podcast. In the past, of course, on our first podcast, we interviewed Kate and DePenna. We talked about the old L.A. metal scene back in the early 80s, Orange County in L.A., as well as the Patrick Scott interview on podcast number 2, talked a lot about the old days of Metallica when they were down in LA before they moved to the Bay Area. This time around, we're going to talk about the 80s thrash metal scene of the Bay Area and the San Francisco club scene. And we'll be talking to metal pioneers Bill Hale and John Stranansky. Both of them worked for Metal Rendezvous, a classic metal magazine back in the 80s. So we're going to be getting into that in just a bit. Also on this podcast, going to feature a classic metal interview excerpt I did with System of a Down back when they just signed with American Recordings. I interviewed both Darren and Shavo while they were in the studio recording their first album, so they talk about some interesting stuff regarding the songs off the first record. Also, later on, I'm going to be interviewing a metal expert by the name of Sherman P. White. I know a lot of people these days claiming to be metal experts. Everyone and their mother, it seems like, is a metal expert these days, but believe me, this guy, Sherman White, a true metal expert. You definitely want to stick around for that. Got a lot of stuff, so we're going to go ahead and get going. But before we get started with this Bill Hale interview, I want to quickly give out my email address. If you have any questions, suggestions, or hate mail, send them to me at shockwaves@hardradio.com. Send them to me directly, Bob Nalbandian. More information on the Hard Radio page, www.hardradio.com. We're also on iTunes. Check us out on iTunes. And we'll be putting together a MySpace page. I know I said I'd never do it, but, you know, what the hell. We're going to go ahead and put a MySpace page together. I believe the address is myspace.com/shockwaveshardradio, all one word. With that said, man, let's get into this. Here is a phone conversation with Bill Woolly Hale.
Got on the phone right now, the legendary Bill Woolly Hale. What's up, Bill Hale? How you doing, man?
Not bad, Bob. How are you doing? I'm
very good. You sound a little bit burnt out, man. Is Hawaii running you down out there, man? What's up with that?
No, Hawaii is amazing. The temperature is, you know, beautiful weather all the time, so I'm usually up at 6 and I go to bed at 2 and you know, living off of 4 hours of sleep when you're 45.
William, as he's called professionally, actually grew up in the Bay Area during the thrash scene, which we're going to be talking about in a bit. He's been living in Hawaii the last few years, one of the premier photographers back in the day. He was working for Metal Rendezvous with Saint Red, John Stranansky, who we'll be talking to a little bit later. Let's talk about those old days, the old Metal Rendezvous days. Metal Rendezvous started about the same time I started Headbanger Magazine, fanzine, which was 82, something like that.
We had in works, I guess, it was 80, we started thinking about it. 81, we finally had something done, and full swing by 82, and it was John Stranansky and I, St. Red. You know, he was the editor and writer, and I was the photographer. John had a knack for knowing the right bands before they broke. And we both had the same taste in music. We both grew up with, like, the early glam stuff like Sweet and Slade and Suzy Quatro and then Deep Purple. Brian Slagle had the New Heavy Metal Review. We were getting ready to do it. And it takes a long time to figure out what you could do, the format and stuff like that being one. And somehow John and I wanted to be a little more slick or a little more professional about what we did. And
Rendezvous, many people, the new listeners may not know, that was, it started out as original fanzine, and then it went out to a full-color magazine like Rip Magazine. It didn't quite have the publishing power as Rip did, being published by Larry Flynt back back in the day.
Yeah, we didn't have the big bucks. But, you know, the thing was really weird. Like, in the middle of the 80s, people were writing stories on us. Billboard wrote a story on us. High Times wrote a story on us. Kerrang wrote a story on us. The Cream Metal Issues wrote a story on us. And it was really weird to have, you know, people saying how, you know,
other magazines writing.
Yeah, and that was bizarre. We had a thing about the people who really knew what they were talking about. You brought Armored Saint to us. You brought Metallica to us, you know. You brought Malice to us. And other people brought certain things. So we just knew the right people to talk to.
Well, let's talk about Power Surge, the heavy metal interactive CD-ROM photo gallery, I guess you could call it, that you're working on right now. And I got to tell you, Bill Hale took some of the greatest, not only underground, but classic metal photos. I mean, throughout Power Surge, there's well over 400 pictures from classic metal bands such as Thin Lizzy, Queen, AC/DC, Black Sabbath, Priest, Deep Purple, I mean, you name it, as well as the emerging San Francisco metal scene of the early 80s. I mean, you had some of the greatest shots, not only Metallica, I mean, of the early Exodus, Laws Rock and Metal Church.
Even some of the LA bands that snuck up there, like Armored Saint's very first shows in San Francisco.
Right.
We lived in Monterey. San Francisco is 133 miles, so we had to drive back and forth. So we really couldn't go party and be whatever. It started when MSG opened for Cheap Trick at Oakland Coliseum or whatever. It was like 1980, standing in line. I see this guy with fuzzy hair, got this dog, and it turned out to be Paul Bailoff. And then I met Mike Borden and Cliff. They were best friends. Clipper, and they were best friends. Mm-hmm. I thought Mike was cool because he had a really old, faded Motorhead t-shirt,
right.
And no one else had a Motorhead t-shirt. That's how we knew it cool, because it's the t-shirt you wore.
Yeah.
John had this Iron Maiden Killers jacket he got, and that's how Lars discovered Chernowsky, because he called it Bill Burkhart, who ran the Walnut Creek Records Exchange. Everybody who was anybody was at that show that night. Gary Holt was there, the guy from Blind Illusion, and then Lars flew up. The next big thing was Saxon rolls into town on the first tour, and Saxon plays three nights. The Keystone family had three clubs, Keystone Berkeley, from Berkeley, the Stone in San Francisco, and the Keystone Palo Alto, which is like 10 miles south of San Francisco. So the first night, Mike Varney had a band called Steel. They're like the first real heavy metal band we saw, San Francisco saw. They're Steel. They had a song called Guillotine Nightmare, which I think shows up someplace in the middle. What did Mike Varney sing?
Oh, U.S. Metal.
U.S. Metal. They show up someplace.
Right.
But that was the first night. It was crazy. The second night, a band called Tyrant opens up.
The L.A. Tyrant?
The San Francisco Tyrant. Danny Gill's playing guitar. Danny shows up as Hurricane Alice in a couple other places.
Right.
And that was crazy. And then the third night in the Palo Alto, Trauma opens up with Cliff Burton. And it's funny because everybody I know or I read about interviews about Cliff, the first time they see Cliff, it's like, oh my God, look at that guy headbang. Trauma was like a metal band. You know, they're all leather, black leather and stuff, except for Cliff, who's on this side of the stage, blue jeans, and he's just banging his head. It was just crazy. And I didn't photograph that show. It was kind of crazy. I should have, but I didn't, because I didn't hear too many things about Trauma that was good. So,
I didn't care for the album. I believe it was one of Shrapnel's early releases. I don't recall it being that good of a record.
It wasn't really, but you know, it was Cliff Burton. It was crazy. John and I would have, like, I go to John's apartment on Tuesday night. We would do Metal Rendezvous. We would work out our layouts. I'd bring photographs over. We were so anal, he would count the spaces, you know, on the typewriter.
Back then, there were no computers. It was all done on typewriters,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, and
then,
yeah.
And they weren't even electric typewriters, most of them.
Yeah.
The ones I used weren't.
But it was crazy because Lars would call up. At first, he'd call up at the gas station he used to work at, and he'd go, hey, John, what's up? But I'm going to band practice. I'm going to call you in 20 minutes. And so they get to band practice, and he'd say, hey, John, here's a new song called Hit the Lights. And he put the phone down, and we'd listen to Metallica rehearse Hit the Lights. So the first time they come to San Francisco, it was...
with Hans Noddy, wasn't it? Or was that
yeah,
with
it was Hans Noddy and Bitch.
Bitch.
Yeah, it was Brian Slagle wanted to bring up some metal bands, and one of the bands canceled up, and they asked Lars, and Lars said, yeah, we'll do it. So that's the first time Metallica comes up. It was Hans Noddy, Metallica, and Bitch. And it's like 10 people in the crowd, because no one knows anybody.
Right, right.
Kind of thing. And Hans Noddy's a Van Halen clone, and we all know what Bitch is like. And that was really cool. You know, we already knew Metallica. We hung up backstage. The infamous first photograph of that Mustaine lineup was Ron McGovney. We took that backstage. It was crazy. Then the next time they played, like a month later at the old Waldorf, the place is packed. It was crazy. Word of mouth. I mean, no one shows up, but all of a sudden, crazy. And Quintana had I think they might have had a demo tape already, and Ron knew about it. And the second show they played at the Waldorf, I knew the scene had changed because it was all young kids. And the Waldorf is Bill Graham's club. You know, like Bruce Springsteen played there, Pat Benatar played there. All the your first shows in San Francisco, you played this club. You know, it's like had this prestige to it. All of a sudden, these kids are taking over, and they're not destroying the place, but destroying the place. It was just, I've never seen so many kids. You know, the energy kind of thing. Yeah, it was crazy. And Cliff was hanging out. We all knew that Ron was out. You know, I knew after the first time I saw him, you know, Ron's a great guy. He's not admitted in. And then Lars in his big mouth whispers at me, don't tell anybody, but we're getting rid of Ron. And this is going on for, you know, two separate shows 2 months later kind of thing.
Right.
And Cliff's hanging out, and we're talking, so, you know, all kind of giddy. And then, you know, we heard the news. They finally axed him, and they're moving up. And Exodus used to live with a guy named Mark Whitaker. And so what happens is Lars needs some place to stay, and they kick Exodus out of the house. And Metallica moves in. And so Dave and James and Lars move in. It was crazy. And that was...
Now, was this the original Thrash house in San Francisco?
It was in East Bay.
El Cerrito.
Across the beach, yeah. And that was crazy. We'd go there a couple times and stuff like that. But the very first show with Cliff was just insane. People just knew what was going on. Then Cliff does his bass solo. And everybody's going, wow. Then Lars jumps in and joins him on the bass solo. At that time, we knew that Metallica was going to be huge. They're doing something no one else has done as a guitar bass solo, and it's together, and it's like a metal bass solo. And it was just, my jaw's dropping. I've been a rock fan for a long time. We saw Thin Lizzy, UFO, all these amazing bands. And here are this little punk band kind of thing, these kids, and they're tearing it up. The very last show before they left to go to New York, Exodus opened up. That was the craziest show ever.
Right. And now that was when Kirk Hammett was with Exodus.
Yeah, and so I got photographs backstage, Dave and Kurt and stuff. And so, yeah, that was just a crazy-ass show.
So we're going to have some stuff posted from Power Surge on the Hard Radio site. Check it out, hardradio.com. Coming up, we're going to give you little samples. Let's talk about Power Surge right now. I know you're still in the editing stages and whatnot. Any tentative release date for this?
I'm hoping to have stuff and an agent, hopefully by the end of the year. With technology so really cool now, Bob, he's done all the editing for me. Thank you. Thank you so much. And it's 400 pages. That's just one point. And it's like 700 photographs. And we both feel that, you know, for a publisher taking on maybe too much. So I thought, we'll do an interactive DVD-ROM. We'll put more photographs up. We'll jam-pack it up. I'm going through scans. I found some stuff that I didn't use the first time. They were just totally amazing. To talk about Metallica, this is a group shot on stage at the Stone. It's the Dave lineup with Dave and Lars and James and Cliff. And it's just totally awesome. It was on MySpace page for a while, and people just go apeshit over it. It's going to be kind of cool. I haven't decided if I'm going to put music to it or not, or going to talk to people, you know, if they want to donate a song or two. But I'm actually trying to get more of the artists involved. It'll be a photograph and then text.
A lot of people know your photographs, obviously, from Metal Rendezvous, but which really made a huge impact were those early Metallica photographs with Ron McGovney back when he was in the band, which appeared in Kerrang.
Issue number 43 with Rock Goddess on the cover.
43.
I was so stoked because the two pages before it was a photograph of a band called Acid, and it's done by Finn Costello. Finn Costello is this amazing photographer.
I remember. Acid, that was a chick singer, right? The Belgium band.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought they were Venom with a chick singer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so I was really thrilled that I'm back-to-back with Finn Costello and stuff.
Wow.
And that photograph, that Metallica photograph, is in Bootleg everywhere. I have it on Bootleg CDs, Bootleg patches. Kerrang used it 4 or 5 times.
The thing about Kerrang is they would just have a full-page photo of, like, Angus Young or of Lemmy or something, and you would just freak out. Tell me about this photo. You being an old-school metalhead, remember this. Michael Schenker on stage with Scorpions in a leather jacket and bedroom slippers and, like, underwear on. What the hell was he thinking? I remember people were saying that he just got released from the psycho ward.
My favorite Schenker photograph is, like, Rudy and the brothers are on stage, and Michael has his black and white boots on. They're like his V, and his hair straight down.
I remember that.
There's a Pete Wade photograph, and him in his white and black stripes. Benny Wade back with his
Steve
bass.
Harris.
Steve Harris, Rick Savage, and Brian Lee all have a pair of black and white striped trousers because of Pete Wade. Another Ross Halford photograph is Phil and Knott in the graveyard with the crosses behind him. December 12, 1982, I think I'm 19 years old, we get second row seats for Thin Lizzy at the Warfield, which is that notorious theater in San Francisco on Market Street. We had seen Thin Lizzy at Dean Green.
They played with Journey, right?
Yeah, it was Journey, The Rockets, Jay Giles, Nazareth, UFO, Thin Lizzy.
Wow.
And you know, just UFO Thin Lizzy and Nazareth alone is amazing, you know. Yeah. And the Thin Lizzy show, that's with Gary Moore's last show with Thin Lizzy. The rumor has it that him and Phil had a punch out, and, you know, Gary's gone. But Thin Lizzy is one of those bands, they never sold tons of records, but people love them. People like the Phil and Not character.
Those of you just turning in, you're in the middle of an interview, a phone conversation, actually, I had with Bill Hale. We're talking about the old San Francisco metal scene in particular. In fact, we're going to get back to the conversation about the early 80s club scene back in San Francisco. So let's continue on with Bill Hale.
There was a big metal scene. It was starting to get divided. It was like, first it was like metal. And then like everything else, and Exodus saw Metallica, and they went really thrash, because they would do like Scorpions every
time. What was the old Exodus like? They were like Scorpions, huh? I can't picture Paul Bailoff in that style.
Yeah, they're doing cover tunes, but like the UFO type of things, you know?
Right.
But then they saw Metallica, and then, you know, Dying by His Hand and Whipping Cream and those songs started coming out. The first time I saw Death Angel, the drummer was 12 years old. And I think the biggest band for anybody else was Y&T. Everybody loved Y&T.
Yeah. So I remember actually Metallica opened for Y&T on the Black Tiger tour when Y&T played the Woodstock Club in Anaheim. Yeah. Y&T were a metal band back then. Everyone associates Y&T with Summertime Girls and those songs.
Earthshaker was like the album. And then Black Tiger was this really good
band. The previous releases Struck Down and their debut record, which were very Van Halen-ish.
I think the first one came out in 76.
Yeah, actually they came out before Van Halen.
I went to Y&T's practice pad and his big old poster was like Y&T and then Van Halen. You know, so it's like the Lake Diamond story. Lakes Diamond opened, where they're the biggest band, and everybody else opened up for them. He used to have the first Snow EP. Stratus had a huge record collection. He didn't have that.
Well, cool, Willie. Always good talking to you, man. Always a pleasure. Let's hook up soon. I'm going to make my way out to Hawaii, hopefully by the end of the year.
I have an extra bedroom.
Say hi to my old buddy Capone for me. We'll talk soon, man. Thanks.
Okay, man.
All right.
Alrighty, this is what we're going to do right now. I'm going to play you a short interview excerpt. This short interview clip was a phone interview I did with both Darren and Chavo from the band System of a Down. This was back in 1999 when the band first signed with American Recordings. This is when they just got in the studio to record their classic self-titled debut record. I discussed with the band about some of the song titles that later appeared on that record, as well as their songwriting approach.
Can you tell some of the newer titles that you've been working on maybe since the days you've been playing out?
It's pretty much we actually wrote some new stuff, and we have played them out the last few months.
Mm.
We have a new song called X, which is not on the album, but
that's FX?
No, X. Just X.
Oh, X.
It really doesn't have a name, so we just symbolize it with X.
Cool.
Yeah. Song suggestions.
Suggestions.
The devil.
What about like Sugar and Honey and any of those old ones, or you don't know?
Sugar, probably.
Sugar is going to probably be a keeper on the album. See, some things we feel that are like too, sometimes we want to like not come in everyone's face with come in everyone's face.
We record them on that too.
With everything we have, you know?
Right,
like,
I gotcha.
It's just, we like things done very tastefully, you know? It just because we have a great song doesn't mean that it's the right time for this song.
Right. Now, you had mentioned you're looking to do it more and more of a hardcore direction, because I know a lot of your songs are, you know, obviously, you know, very, I don't want to use the word obscure, let's just say kind of ethnic.
Well, actually, it's going to be that System of a Down type of hardcore, I guess.
Right.
Because it's not like hardcore, like, you know, cliche New York
type
of like sound, or LA type of sound. You know what I mean? It's just what we do, except, you know, we're trying to, I guess, come off heavy. But the reason why I say we're trying to make it as hardcore as possible is because we have some songs that aren't on that tip. Like, we have songs that are like, you know, like waltzy, like Peephole.
Right.
And we have a newer song called Spiders that's very slow. And the reason why I'm saying we're focusing on making it hardcore is because we want to put in those songs in the album and not take away from the hard edge
I gotcha.
Of the album. So that's, I guess, what I mean about trying to...
Yeah, the album will have, you know, be on a hard tip.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's going to be very aggressive.
It's just placing certain songs in the right place and at the right time, you know, so it just... comes off the right way, you know. The songs just go from place to place. Like, if you're listening to War and then you'll turn on People, you know, you can't compare those two songs together.
Right, right.
I mean, they have a certain sound to them. That's because it's us.
And you know it's us when you hear it.
But it's we like to do that. It's sort of like the Beatles influence of the band. If you were to sit down and listen to a Beatles album, it's really cool because each song has their own, like, personality,
sure,
their own character, and they make you feel a certain way. And that's what I love about that band. So, and that's sort of something that we've tried to for ourselves, you know.
And also in the studio, like doing the record, we're trying to develop a sound that's very original and that's ours.
Okay, it's time now to continue on with our San Francisco Bay Area thrash metal special. I played you the phone conversation I had with Bill Hale earlier today. Right now I'm going to play you a separate phone conversation I had with his partner, John Stranansky, the editor-in-chief from Metal Rendezvous. John, an old-school metalhead, one of the most knowledgeable people when it comes to metal music. In this phone interview excerpt, John's going to talk about several things, including the Bay Area thrash metal scene of the early 80s, as well as a lot of the European metal scene, the new wave of British heavy metal, and some of the early 70s European metal. John, of course, grew up in Germany, and he talks about a little bit of the difference between the European and the American metal scene right there. So we're going to play you this phone segment, then we're going to follow that up with the interview, as I said, with metal expert Sherman White, and that'll be followed up with the guitar riffs. But right now, let's get into the phone conversation with Saint Red, John Stranansky.
The legend, John Stranansky, a.k.a. Saint Red. What is up?
Hey, just hanging out in hot Dallas this summer.
Yeah, that's right. You're a recent Dallas resident, man. Yeah. How you liking it out there?
So far, so good. You know, we get some good shows come through occasionally, so it looks like a pretty good place.
Dallas, the hometown of hard radio. There must be some metal still alive out in Dallas.
Yeah, it is.
For those not familiar with John Stranansky, he was the man behind Metal Rendezvous, one of the original metal fanzines here in the U.S. In fact, I believe you started just prior to me starting the Headbanger magazine. I, of course, started it in L.A., actually Orange County at the time. This was early 80s, 1982, I believe. Is that around when Metal Rendezvous started?
Yeah, I remember getting together with some friends back when we got the first Iron Maiden album. So we're probably talking 80, 81, and kind of was starting to throw the idea around, hey, we should do a magazine. We found this paper. It was more like a flyer from Florida. It was my buddy Bob. Not you, but another Bob.
Is that Bob Gamber?
Yeah. Who got a flyer from his friend in Florida that was just talking about some new bands to come out of Europe, and we thought, hey, we should just do a whole magazine. But it took us a couple of years to actually get the first issue off the ground. We didn't know what we were doing, but we had a blast doing it.
That was the whole idea. I remember starting Headbanger. The first metal magazine, actually fanzine, I should say, was Brian Slagle's New Heavy Metal Review, which was one of the first out of L.A. And then, of course, Ron Quintana had Metal Mania from the Bay Area. And that kind of sparked me to start Headbanger. You were in Monterey, which is close to the Bay Area.
Yep.
And, of course, in New York, there was Bob Muldoney, Kick-Ass Monthly, and there were a few other fanzines that were floating around, but definitely Metal Rendezvous was one of the first and one of the finest that actually went on to magazine status. What was the first issue of the actual full-color magazine?
The first full-color one that we did actually had the Scorpions and Ingrid Malmsteen dual cover. It was a report from the famous Day on the Green in 1985. That was our first color issue, and that was a Day on the Green, the big outdoor festival, the Oaken Stadium, that Metallica played at, Scorpions played at, Yngwie, the German band Victory was there, YNT, and Rat. It was pretty cool lineup back then.
Right. Metal Rendezvous went on for quite a few years. It was one of the few metal magazines. Of course, you were competing with some of the bigger magazines like Rip that had major publishers behind them, but you pretty much did everything yourself. It was self-published, right?
We did everything on our own. We did it out of my house in Monterey. We did have a distributor who was located in Wisconsin and Milwaukee, but that was about it. As far as all the publishing and everything, we did ourselves with a small team and a totally dedicated team of writers all around the world, and that included you, Bob.
That's right. Yeah. I was the L.A. correspondent.
Yes.
But definitely one of the best metal fanzines out there. If you could scrape up some old issues of Metal Rendezvous, treasure them. They're going for big bucks.
Check on eBay. I've seen someone sell there recently.
So. Yeah, the price keeps going up.
Yeah.
Well, dude, let's talk about the early 80s Bay Area scene. The San Francisco metal scene is where a lot of people say thrash metal, or I should say American thrash metal, originated. Take us back to the early 80s, some of the shows. And, in fact, you did a lot of the shows there. Didn't you do the Metal Mondays? Or was that Quintana?
No, the Metal Mondays were kind of, that was at the old Waldorf, a club that doesn't exist anymore. But
right.
That was at the old Waldorf in the Embarcadero area of San Francisco. It was a really cool little club that had shows throughout the 70s. I believe Judas Priest and AC/DC played it there at some point in the 70s. But then in the 80s, they started the Metal Mondays, and I know Ron Quintana was involved, but it included such bands as the early Exodus, early Laz Rocket, Steel, not to be confused with the L.A. Steeler, but a band called Steel that was pretty hip.
I remember them.
The early days of Vicious Rumors and Anvil Chorus that had Duck Pearson.
Duck Pearson went on to Heathen.
Yeah, they went on to become Heathen. So it was those kind of bands, and a bunch of unknowns that obviously didn't make it past a certain time, but it was just a great scene where everybody got to know everybody. That's where I saw Trauma with Cliff Burton the first time around as well, was at the Metal Monday in San Francisco. So just a great, great scene. Everybody became friends. There was no real competition. I mean, it was friendly competition.
Sure,
obviously. But we all knew each other. We all hung out together. It was just a fabulous scene.
Well, of course, that's where Metallica got their big break. They came up there, and then everything changed from there. Now, you obviously saw some of the first Metallica shows.
I actually saw the very first show that Metallica played in San Francisco. They actually came by Monterey to pick me up, which was really cool. So I drove up to San Francisco with them, and on that bill was also Bitch.
Oh, yes.
Came up, and Laz Rocket, the band that I already mentioned, was also on that bill. So it was just a great show. First ever show for Metallica in San Francisco, and I was honored to also be offered the job of announcing the band from the stage to the crowd.
All right.
The crowd at the Stone on Broadway in San Francisco.
Well, I remember Bill Hale, he sent me a great picture of you. It looks like you're like putting their set list or something together.
Yeah. The good old days.
Yeah. And, well, so what was it from there that kind of sparked the whole thrash metal scene? Obviously, before Metallica came up, bands like Exodus and stuff were around, but their sound was a little bit different. When Metallica came up there the first time, it just basically, San Francisco kind of changed musically.
Yeah, absolutely. The bands now got realized they had to play faster and louder and heavier and more riffs and more guitars. And I think what happened is that Metallica actually got this gig, not at the old Waldorf, the first one, but at the Stone, which is a little more prestigious of a club. And it kind of opened the doors for these bands to start playing in other venues. And that was a key piece of that whole movement, that suddenly they just started getting exposure, not just in one little club that had its own scene, but across the city. And if anything, that's what sparked the movement to really start growing.
Let's talk about the European metal scene. What's some of your favorite new bands coming out of Europe? I know you're real close to a lot of the German bands.
You know, what's amazing is that if you look at the European scene and the bands that are still doing good business, not just in concerts, because the concerts, those happen out here too, but even in records, just great solid albums coming out continuously over in Europe. And there are some great, great bands out there that we don't hear much about, but just some of the names that I'm going to throw out are bands that are definitely worth checking out. Obviously, it's Hammerfall, who kind of started the whole new wave of European late 90s metal, if that's a term we want to use. But nowadays, there's some great bands like Dream Evil, Wolf, Heed, Astral Doors, who were totally, if you're into
old Rainbow.
Dio Rainbow era, definitely a band to check out. Dark Illusion, Nocturnal Rites, Ed Vance. I could just continue and continue. There's tons of them out there.
It seems like most of them are coming out from Germany or, of course, Sweden.
Absolutely. That has always been kind of the breeding ground for a lot of these bands. And if you look at the history, I mean, this goes all the way back into the early 80s.
Sure.
Those same areas, you know, Sweden with the Silver Mountains and those kind of bands. And
absolutely.
Germany,
the old Europe, Torch, Oz.
Yeah, with Accept and all those. Just great place. Music just hasn't changed much in those areas and just gotten better and better.
Well, of course, a lot of those metal bands, the heavier bands, and even the death metal bands will actually be on the top of the pop charts in some of those countries.
You know, it's funny you mention that because Lordi has just won the Eurovision contest, and anybody that's heard of the Eurovision contest...
Like ABBA.
Yeah, bands that have been winning the Eurovision and pop people, but then Lordi just swept everybody away and won it this year. So I think that's a great sign of how strong heavy metal still is over in Europe.
Now let's talk about the new wave of British heavy metal and the older European metal bands. What were some of your favorites coming out during then? Let's kind of take the listener back to the early 80s of the European and new wave of British heavy metal.
You know, we could talk forever for the new wave of British heavy metal.
Sure.
Angel Witch, Tigers of Pantang, some of those classic names from that era, Holocaust. But I was also into the Swedish stuff that was coming out at the time. I mean, who can forget Torch, their original EP.
That first EP.
Fantastic
Beyond.
Stuff. If you ever get a chance to play it for people, definitely do.
Metal Blade reissued that, I believe, on CD.
You're right.
Yeah.
There's some of the classics also that are still around, like Merciful Fate.
Sure. First EP on Ravon. Well, of course, the old demos. I mean, when you got, like, the old Silver Mountain demo, the old first Merciful Fate demo 1, 2, and 3 were just amazing. The production was so bad, but they were so raw. But the great thing about it, you listen to Merciful Fate when they came out with Melissa and some of their later records, it was so overproduced and polished. But there were just some amazing demos at the time.
There were. One of my favorite demos of all time is an old demo from Candlemass.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Candlemass from Sweden went on to some huge successes later on. But prior to their debut album, they had several demos out that were just fantastic. And I became pretty good friends with Leif, the bass player, and who kept just sending me his
stuff. I met him in Sweden, great guy.
And then when Epicus, Doomicus, Metallicus came out, it just set the new standard for the doom metal. And I mean, Candlemass and Trouble, they kind of spearheaded.
Candlemass don't get a lot of credit, but absolutely, them and Trouble. And of course, you know, you had St. Vitus from L.A., but what was it, a Pentagram from New York? They were like some of the early doom metal bands.
Yeah, Pentagram is actually a band that's been around since the early 70s and had several recordings out in that era. So.
Oh, that early. Wow.
Yeah, great band. Bobby Liebling. They were from Virginia.
Well, let's talk about that now because that seems to be a lot of the new trend. It kind of, a lot of people refer to it as stoner rock or stoner metal, doom metal. You know, a lot of these labels, Music Cartel, Meteor City, specialize in this brand of music. But there were a lot of bands, obviously, in the early 80s.
Absolutely. There was, you know, St. Vitus, probably the best known of the American bands.
Right.
You mentioned them already, that really had a lot of impact on the scene. What people don't realize is that trend kind of also continued in the underground. There was a band in the early 90s that kind of carried the torch called Count Raven, a fantastic band from Europe that was on the doom scene. And now, one of the best of the bunch is a band called The Quill.
Great band, yeah.
Yeah, once again from Sweden, that are just fantastic band to listen to.
Now, back to the new wave of British heavy, you had all the singles. In fact, I believe you bought Lars's collection of new wave of British heavy metal singles back when he first moved to the Bay Area. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. You know, like every other band, they didn't have any money. They did it the traditional hard way. I came in and bought a lot of those 45s from him, really obscure stuff. It's almost difficult to remember all of those. But
I know he had, like, the Parallax.
Exactly. The Parallax was his big one that we had to negotiate for about an hour.
I never liked that band. That singer just annoyed me. That was one band everyone praised. Musically, I liked, but that singer would just annoy me. What were some of your favorites of that era? I mean, like you said, we could talk forever about the new wave of British heavy metal.
But from the lesser-known ones, there was a band called Prowler had a 45 out, just a 45 that's just fantastic stuff. Hollow Ground.
Fighting with the Devils.
That just blew my mind.
Guardian Records,
you know,
wasn't that?
Yeah. You know, Trespass, Sweet Savage, who became known just because of the guitar player.
Vivian,
who ended up in Dio and nowadays plays in Def Leppard, of all places. There was some really good bands that unfortunately didn't really make it.
And
but,
great talent, too.
Yeah.
Great vocalists, guitar players.
Yeah.
You mentioned Trespass. You know, it's funny because I came across that. I recently picked up Trespass, put a record out in the early 90s, a CD.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
A lot of these bands have continued on. And, of course, now Neat Records and a lot of the labels have reissued a lot of the stuff on CD.
Correct.
And a lot of the bands have since reformed and doing quite well from what I hear.
Blitzkrieg is another great band that had a great record out just a year ago called Sins and Greed.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
We'll be playing
record.
Stuff from that. Legend, another band still together. They reformed. One of my favorites.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it was just great. And in some ways, today reminds me a lot of the early 80s days when most of the music was coming out of Europe before America kind of caught on with the whole Metallica and Ozzy Osbourne and those kind of bands when they really caught on. But nowadays, it does remind me of the early 80s when most of the stuff was coming out from Europe.
Right.
And I think we're in this kind of same kind of boat again. Just great bands. One band I must mention is a good friend of mine, Masterplan. A new German band. Drummer is Uli Kusch,
yes.
Who used to be in Holy Moses and Helloween. And he now has a band called Masterplan with Ronald Gropov, also from Helloween.
Great band. Well, hey, let's play some Masterplan right now. What song are we going to play?
As I mentioned on the podcast, we're not going to be playing the music. We're only going to be featuring the interviews. We're right now in the middle of a phone conversation with John Stranansky talking about the underground Bay Area metal scene of the early 80s. In this final segment, we're going to go way back, talk about the old European scene of the early 70s and some of the great bands that spawned from that era. You are listening to Shockwaves on hardradio.com.
John Stranansky actually grew up in Germany, came over here to the States in, what, the late 70s?
No, in the mid-70s. 1975, I was here. I moved to California in 1975 and immediately started looking for some of the bands that I really grew up on in Germany. The scene over there was real interesting. It was a little bit segmented. There was a glam scene that included such bands that were huge at the time, you know, Sweet, Slate, T-Rex. Even Nazareth were kind of grouped into that. Susie Quattro was just huge at the time.
I've never understood why Nazareth, because I see glam compilations in Nazareth are on. They are, like, so not glam.
They're not, but somehow they ended up being grouped in that. Because, you know, if you listen to the singles, and this is singles before the famous Love Hurts song that they did. But
right.
You listen to some of the earlier singles, like the version of This Flight Tonight, and it kind of does have that kind of a glammy approach to it. Roxy
right.
Music, for example, was also grouped in this, and the early Roxy Music when Eno was still in the band. And then was that other, this is really the underground kind of drugged out, for the lack of a better word, drugged out scene that included such one of the best bands of the bunch, Lucifer's Friend. Just a fantastic band.
Now, they're an interesting band. They were around since the early 70s, kind of like Scorpions. They came out around that era.
Their first album came out the same year as the first Scorpions album that came out. An amazing, amazing band, especially the debut album, is worth finding.
And they kind of had a keyboard, a little bit of Uriah Heep kind of sound.
And many people did compare them. There was also another band called Weed that was around at the time, and actually it was Ken Hensley that was in that band. Another band that was just huge in the German underground in kind of this drug area. And of all the bands, UFO had their early successes in Germany as well.
With Michael Schenker.
This was even before, with a space rock album.
Really?
That came out before the phenomenon.
Yeah, with Mick Bolton. But a lot of the bands that you mentioned, Sweet, here in America, people only recognize their hit songs. Status Quo was another band, huge in Europe, no one ever heard of here. Budgie were never even heard of here by fans in the States. They were around since the early 70s. And a lot of the other bands you talk about, Slade, seeing that you moved from Germany over here, was it a lot different?
Well, back then, we also must consider what this world was like. It wasn't the global village that it is today. I mean, America was still so far away for us. when we were living in Europe, and it was a dream for many to even come and visit, you know, the United States, and I'm sure that impacted these bands. It was a lot bigger of an undertaking for them to put together an American tour and get an American deal. It seemed like there were just two separate markets that have not found a way to truly blend together until the 80s came around. We really started becoming a global village through technology and cheaper transportation and all of those things that as we changed.
Let's talk about some of your favorite shows that you have seen throughout the years.
You always remember your first, and my first had a double impact on me because it was the night Elvis Presley died in August of 1977, and it was Kiss with Cheap Trick opening at the San Francisco Cow Palace.
And oh, wow.
You know, you can't forget that when Paul Stanley starts screaming at you before the encore, telling us that the King had died, and then dedicates Rock and Roll All Night to, you know, to Elvis Presley, so that was fun. Obviously, the early days on the Green, I mentioned them earlier in our discussion, but
right.
they were a regular summer event in the Bay Area, and everybody, there was anybody, played a day on the Green. I actually got to see Thin Lizzy with Gary Moore play a day on the Green.
That's great.
Bands like, Ted Nugent's Journey, all those bands.
See, we never had that in Southern California. You had the yearly thing, Day on the Green. Of course, Bill Graham presented every summer there. We would occasionally, we had the Cal Jam the one year, of course, Cal Jam 2 in 78, and then you had like the California Music Festival, and various festivals that would come across, but nothing like a permanent yearly thing.
This wasn't just a yearly thing. This was a 3 or 4 times a year thing.
Oh, really?
The summer was just packed with these days on the Green back then. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
There was 3 or 4 of them each summer.
That's awesome.
So some great shows. Obviously, when the new wave of British heavy metal started and the whole metal revival, and these first bands started to come across the pond, it was just a fantastic, exciting
time. That was
amazing.
Saxon
Michael
and Maiden.
Michael Schenker Group opening up for Cheap Trick of all bands. Went to see that show, and who can forget some of the early Iron Maiden shows when they were opening up for the Scorpions and, you know, Motorhead, our first Motorhead show at the old Waldorf when Lemmy was complaining that it wasn't loud enough, so they had to borrow Blue Oyster Cult's PA system.
They opened up for Blue Oyster Cult?
No, they played the next night, the night after, but they talked them into letting them borrow their setup for the night.
I saw their first show here where they opened up for Ozzy, actually, on the Blizzard of Oz tour when Ozzy first played here with Randy Rhoads, of course. Great show.
Absolutely. Another one of my favorite bands that played in the Bay Area all the time was YNT. Yesterday and Today, as they were originally called.
Awesome band.
Got to see them about 10 times every year in the early 80s. Just every show was worth it. Great band.
Great stuff.
I just want to, make sure that everybody knows that the metal scene is far from dead. It may be a little weak here in the States, but if you look around the entire world, there's so much good music going on out there. And in the age of the internet, there's just no excuse not to support some of these bands.
Absolutely.
I mentioned some of them. Some of them that I haven't mentioned that need to be mentioned is Cornerstone, another great band that is based out of Europe with Doogie White on vocals, very rainbow-like, fantastic band. Empire with Tony Martin on vocals, sounds very classic Tony Martin era Black Sabbath sound. New bands like Ed Guy and Bloodbound, I mean, we could go on forever, just some fantastic stuff. Get online, start finding out about these bands, and support them as much as you can.
John Stranansky, man, thank you very much for talking. And what are we going to close out with? Let's play another new band out of Europe.
I would suggest, I know we mentioned some of these bands, but either Astral Doors or Wolf would be a great one to close with.
Let's play some Astral Doors for you right now. You are listening to Shockwaves on HardRadio.com.
All right, I know you've all been waiting for this. We're going to do a short interview I did with metal expert Sherman P. White. Some of you may or may not be familiar with Sherman P. White. I got to tell you, though, this guy is a true heavy metal expert. So without further ado, let's get going. Here is Sherman P. White.
Right now with heavy metal expert Sherman P. White. How's it going, Sherman?
Well, I'm actually preparing a lecture for Pepperdine University. Got quite a crowd coming out on the 29th of this month.
How would you classify some of the different types of heavy metal?
First of all, I got to realize there's a variety of different types of metals. For example, we've got aluminum, we've got brass, bronze, cadmium, copper, chromium, gold, iron, lead, nickel. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Let me ask you this.
Yes, Sherman.
Why does it matter how heavy it is?
Well, let's get into that. How would you classify the difference between, say, hard rock and heavy metal?
Well, the word rock refers to solid mineral deposits. Rocks are minerals, but not all minerals are rocks.
Interesting.
Like, for example, hard rocks are igneous rock, forms of minerals that are heated to extremely high temperatures and allowed to cool, which creates the hard rock. Now, metamorphic rock is a rock that undergoes a transformation usually caused by pressure, heat, and water.
Very interesting, Sherman White. Go on.
You know, the best example of heavy metal would be titanium, which is non-ferrous metal, with excellent corrosion resistance and high strength. And you also have super alloys, such as nickel, cobalt, and iron-based alloys. You know, I consider those very heavy.
God damn, Sherman, you are definitely an expert when it comes to heavy metal. What are your views on the different types of, say, alternative metal and industrial metal?
Well, as you know, there are several alternative types of heavy metal, like zinc and zinc alloys, that are used widely to galvanize metals, such as iron, in order to prevent corrosion. For example, one may consider copper, brass, and bronze an industrial non-ferrous metal, but since they are excellent electrical and thermal conductors, as well as good corrosion resistance, ductility and strength become quite abundant and very necessary as part of the cathodic protection that we use in generating electricity through these types of metals to prevent the SCC.
Unbelievable.
Well, thank you, sir.
I've
got many years as a metallurgist.
Let's talk about your background, Sherman, before you became a certified metallurgist.
Well, you know, I did work in the cheese factory at my great-grandfather's farm, and we were very famous in the county for the types and qualities of cheeses we produce.
Off the topic, I know Gigantor just passed through the Midwest. Did you happen to catch any of those shows?
Good golly. Yes, I used to watch those shows when I was growing up on my parents' farm in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You know, I loved that cartoon with the giant robot. That was such a hoot.
I think
the movie that came out with Johnny Sacco. Now, I love the way that he was able to control the robot through a transmitter in his wristwatch as he combated the evil Dr. Bottomus.
Sherman, that was actually the movie Voyage into Space that I think you're confusing with the cartoon Gigantor. But anyway, on to another subject. I always wonder, what does the P stand for in your name?
Well, I normally don't tell people. This isn't going to be on the record, I hope.
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay, great. Yeah, it is Peabody. I tell most people that it's Peter.
Lastly, Sherman, being a true metalhead, I'm sure you are quite the ladies' man. Tell us about some of those wild stories.
Well, you know, there really was. There was a girl that goes by the name, I'm just going to call her Helen, and she also worked with me in the research department at the University of Wisconsin. This was back in the cheese days. You know, there was an experience where we did get into a little bit of a situation, may I say, and I'm not the type to kiss and tell, but that's about the highlight, and I could elaborate more, but, you know, like I said, I'm working on that Pepperdine University lecture, so I'm afraid I'm going to have to let you guys go at this point.
Well, thank you very much. Sherman P. White, man, you are without question a heavy metal master. I thank you for taking the time to talk to us here on Shockwaves Hard Radio. Good luck with metal, and good luck with that cheese.
Thank you very much, sir, and it's been a great pleasure speaking with you, and hope you guys have great success. Thank you, Robert.
Okay, many thanks to Sherman Peabody White for that. All right, here's what we're going to do now. We're going to go ahead and end the show with 10 metal guitar riffs. We didn't do it on the last episode, on episode number 3, so of course we have no winners. It's been a little tough for you guys. I've got a lot of people were unable to get 8 riffs and 8 guitar leads on the previous one, so I don't know if this is going to be any easier, but we'll do 7 out of 10. Whoever could guess 7 out of these 10 guitar riffs before the next podcast is posted, you'll get a free Hard Radio t-shirt. Okay, so once again, you got to identify both the artist and the song, and you need to correctly identify 7 out of these 10 riffs. Email address is shockwaves@hardradio.com. Here we go. We'll be right back. There you go, man. Correctly identify 7 out of those 10 guitar riffs and you will get a Hard Radio t-shirt. Got to do it before the next podcast is posted. Speaking of next podcast, be sure to check that out. It's going to be a Gigantor special. Going to have a lot of great interviews of a lot of the artists. So you definitely want to check that one out. That will be on the next podcast. So until then, man, thanks for tuning in. Oh, don't forget, we are on iTunes as well. So if you want to check out the podcast on iTunes and you have trouble finding it, just go to the iTunes store. And all you got to do is type in Hard Radio on the search, Hard Radio, one word, and the podcast will pop right up. So check us out on iTunes. Send in your comments, man. Write some reviews. Let us know what you think. Once again, the email address here, shockwaves@hardradio.com. I read and answer all the emails. So go ahead. Feel free to send those emails. Also, we're putting together that MySpace page. Check it out. MySpace.com/shockwaveshardradio. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next week.